Okay, well, it's my pleasure to introduce today Marcin Jakubowski, who, let me do that again. It's my pleasure today to introduce to you Marcin Jakubowski, who is both physicist and farmer and the executive director of Open Source Ecology, which he founded in the final year of getting his PhD in physics at the University of Wisconsin. He's joining us today from his farm in Missouri, where he's building something we're going to talk about called the Global Village Construction Set, and he's doing it with a team that is both local and global, on-site and online. I can't think of a more important project to building the kind of decentralized economy that we talk about here on the Solari report. This is something, and we'll talk about it later, which is a very important option for the investment of your time and donations. And I'm very excited that Marcin could join us today. Marcin, welcome.
I am glad to be here, Mackay.
Well, tell us how you went from being physicist to farmer and inventing the Global Village Construction Set.
Yeah, the standard answer is, so maybe backing up a little bit, I always thought about the power of science creating good things for humankind, and moving further in the educational system, I felt more and more disillusioned about where I was going. And basically in the second year of the PhD program, I was studying fusion. Got quite disillusioned with it. I came into it thinking, oh yeah, fusion is a great energy source for all humankind. And then it kind of became clear that, well, there's issues with it. I mean, there is radioactivity. And it always seemed to be 10 years into the future. So it was kind of disillusioning to see these sessions and back at the university, just theoretical presentations I went to. It's like, I was just starting to ask, well, how is this relevant? How are we really addressing pressing world issues when there are so many of them? And I felt we were just getting farther and farther removed from that. There was a trigger point. Well, I mean, trigger point, perhaps, I mean, just to give you an example of what I'm talking about here. It's one time I went to a professor to ask about, this is something I didn't understand about this wave propagation, some equation that stretched across half the board. So I asked him, said, well, where does this apply? Can I see this thing? Is that some wave traveling through space here? And he said, well, oh, it actually doesn't exist. I just made it up. So, all right. Well, so that's kind of that was one of those hits where I started thinking about other ways of, well, started thinking about other options. Yeah.
Well, it's where, so, you know, it's funny, you see
that time, so it's through that long, even though I was disillusioned, I actually ended up finishing, and it was a long 5-year walk to freedom there where I was out a couple of times, but finished it.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing I did was start up Open Source Ecology. Basically, uh-huh. I would do a lot of time studying sustainability, economics, social justice issues, and Madison is kind of a radicalizing place, so that definitely influenced me. I got highly involved in the student community and all kinds of organizing.
Uh-huh.
A few groups, and then the last was Open Source Ecology. And the way that evolved was going from various organizing and in a social scene, then getting more into the sustainability forums, then getting into one group that I started called Gandhi Network, where we actually got some hands-on practical experience, such as building a bicycle power assist or a solar food refrigerator. But then at the end of the day, I kind of felt disillusioned with that too, because we all get into that on a weekend, and the weekend warriors, and then Monday, the person goes back to work for the man. So that wasn't so satisfactory. And at that point, I thought, well, okay, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to jump in deep, create deep lasting solutions where people can check into an alternate reality.
Mm-hmm. So is that when you moved to Missouri?
So the first year right after that, we settled on 5 acres of land in Madison. Basically, I knocked on some farmers' doors, and land is abundant. People actually get tax write-offs for doing agriculture. So we did that and learned about weeds and equipment. Yeah.
Yeah. It's and how did you choose Missouri?
It happened that some of the organizing friends in the nonprofit sector, they had land down here, so we just settled on that.
Okay,
great weather, not a lot of codes, cheap land.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know all about it. Of course, I live in Hickory Valley, Tennessee, and It's the same thing here. I was talking to a friend in San Francisco the other day, and I said, you know, to own my house next to you would cost $10 million. Anyway, so tell us what the Global Village Construction Set is and how it came to be.
Yeah, Global Village Set, that's a set of the 50 different industrial machines that it takes to build a small civilization with modern comforts. We talk about things to provide food, energy, fabrication, things, everything from a tractor to an oven to a circuit maker. There's industrial robots, renewable energy equipment. It's a set of tools. Basically, coming up with that meant, I basically asked, well, what are some of the things that a person needs in order to be able to create a sustainable civilization or sustainable community or sustainable household? And the Global Village Construction Set was more dedicated towards the village scale or the city scale, starting the infrastructures that are necessary to do that. And it's a set. The concept, people always ask me, well, why do you have this machine instead of that one? Why don't you have the biodiesel reactor in there? Or, well, I say, oh, okay, well, we're making a choice based on the complete set being sufficient to provide a modern standard of living.
Right.
And we won't know that until we test the entire thing. So I'm sure there's many other options and iterations we can do, but for right now, let's just get the thing done and see if it works. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you come into Open Source Ecology, into the website, how do you find the Global Village Construction Set, and what is in it now?
Right, so you can go to opensourceecology.org, and if you click on GVCS, that will list all the 50 different machines.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you go to our wiki, you will see a lot of development pages. The four machines that are closest to release, we released the so-called Civilization Starter Kit version 0.01 with a tractor, the brick press, soil pulverizer, and power unit, where you can download that from the front page and build all of these machines yourself if you have the skills. The plans are all open. We encourage our name of the game is replication and adoption. One more thing about just to briefly mention about what the GVCS is. It's a big, hairy, audacious goal. The claim here is that a few people can take this entire set. Well, actually, on the application of a community scale, like say 200 people, you can take this set, and I'm actually claiming that as few as 12 people with the set can create an absolute modern standard of living minus semiconductors at 2 hours of work per day using local resources.
And when you say 2 hours a day, how long do they have to be doing it?
Sorry?
How many years?
This is if we have the entire set complete.
Uh-huh.
You can build it out in 6 months.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Radical efficiencies of production, and we have the theme of one day pervasive now, kind of branding it around this concept. But we built, for example, the brick press last December 18. We built that thing in a single day. So we're pushing the limits of effective, open source, collaborative production, where by module-based design, basically we break the machines down into the simplest modules possible so that many people can work to design them and build them in parallel. And then towards the end, if you're building this thing out, all the people work on the individual modules. And if the interface is designed, the way that these things fit together is clearly defined, and you can just assemble them together in the last hour. But that's the kind of model, just really pushing the efficiencies of production, because the technology know-how is there. It's simply the access to these enabling tools, to the knowledge, really.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's the key.
And I think the confidence to know that you can make things.
Absolutely. The thing is, I've been transformed myself doing this to see that, wow, we have some amazing potential underneath us in our own hands, and I'd like to show that to many other people on this planet.
One of the things, when I first read the story of what had happened to you and became aware of the Global Village Construction Set, I'm very, you know, in my experience, what the farmers always tell you is the thing that puts them on the treadmill is buying the tractor, paying the loan on the tractor, and then of course that the tractor means they need gas. And they're really on an equipment treadmill. And I saw the story of you starting this with, when your tractor broke down, right?
Yep.
Right. And so it was March and saying, I want to get off the tractor treadmill. And you see farmers who, certainly over where I live, the farmers spend an inordinate amount of time learning how to fix their own equipment. And if you look at how much time they spend trying to fix their equipment or dealing with broken equipment, what you realize is, you know, if they just built it to begin with and did it, you know, sort of as a, in a simpler, streamlined form, they'd probably save time. And so I looked at this and I said, this is going to work. This is absolutely going to work. Yeah.
Yeah. So right now, if you hear any of this grinding in the background here, we're on a fifth day of building the tractor, the version 5 now.
Uh-huh.
And our goal is to show that, I mean, right now, actually, the goal was to do it in a single day, but...
Really?
Our goal is to build each one of these machines in a single day by radically optimizing the production methods, breaking down the things into modules, and... These days we're holding, actually I want to invite people in the audience, if you go to opensourceecology.org/wiki, that's our wiki,
mm-hmm.
You just search for design sprints. What we hold every weekend is sessions where we collaboratively develop all these different machines. So we basically sit around Google Docs, SketchUp, and other online tools to do rapid development on these.
Now, a design sprint is online or on-site or both?
It's both, actually. The people on-site, we may have like 6 people on-site, but it's dedicated to the remote audiences where, I mean, imagine the setting here where, imagine 100 of the world's best engineers come together to do this. You're talking about some serious progress that not even large corporations have access to, and we have the advantage of the social mission that we carry that is the glue for all these people. So
right.
We're tapping an innovative, well, that's just the open source method. We're tapping the human, well, basically the people who are interested in social good beyond what they're doing. So say an older person who's done something professionally
right.
for their life and now they're contributing back to society, this is a venue where this can be expressed.
So tell us, let's go back to, you created the Global Village Constructions. Let's go back and talk about mm-hmm. how you've organized people coming and helping and supporting.
Yeah.
So you started out because your tractor and your farm had run you out of money. You started with crowdfunding, correct?
That's right. So basically when we started, it was myself and my partner that settled on this 30 acres of raw land in Missouri. First thing we do is build a little house, start a little bit of agriculture, then your tractors break down. Yeah, and when that happened, I was broke and started crowdfunding. I basically reported on a blog what I wanted to do, started setting up funding baskets, and people paid for it because I was committed to it. This was my life.
Uh-huh.
I was showing progress. And that was, a long time ago.
When did you create 1,000 true fans?
We don't have 1,000 true fans. We have about 400 right now.
I know, because I'm one of them.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm a true fan.
So this is where, this goes into our explosive growth, because since...
One of my goals is to get you 1,000 true fans. I want you to get up to 1,000.
Okay, that's great. So let me just tell you a little background on that. So in 2011, we were operating on a 2,000 per month budget, and I was putting all my money into the development.
Mm-hmm.
And we got put on a world stage with a TED Talk, and it's been growing 500% ever since.
Fantastic.
But, the true fans numbers grew and so forth. But in the last year, lots of growing pains as you scale an organization.
Sure,
absolutely. I kind of lost track with the true fans, so that if you sign up as a true fan, that's my bad that I don't even know about it, because we're just reorganizing all those databases and all that. But we're actually just setting up a true fans network where...
Uh-huh.
I'm going to basically every 2 weeks, there will be a conference call with me. We can discuss things. And I want to get the true fans involved in the design sprints much more, because there's a lot of different areas that people can contribute in. But, yeah, we want to get those numbers up. And especially we want to diversify our funding sources, because right now we're largely supported by foundations. And that, you know, that comes and goes.
Right.
So we want to go back to our true crowdfunding roots and production. So right now the Brick Press, Tractor, maybe the CNC Torch Table, they're all very close to being viable products. I mean, we did actually clear $25,000 back in 2011 selling our equipment. So we've got proof of concept. But as we move forward, in order to scale this to the level of replication of all these OSC incubators worldwide, we need to do that by bootstrap earnings.
Is it good economics for you to start a school? Because I know a lot of farmers who are going to be hesitant to just take the, you know, download the plans and do it themselves. They're going to want human contact.
Right.
And and so an opportunity to come to Missouri and, you know, just do a workshop with you.
Yep.
You know, and it could also be online, but I think they're going to need personal contact. So.
Right. So I'm glad you bring this up, because we are talking a lot about that right now. So for one, we're creating a two-week crash program for helping all these skills and technical skills, but also organizational skills.
Right.
We're pairing up, and this is just very recent. The tractor we're building right now is going down to our school at Blair Grocery, an urban farming project in New Orleans. And they're actually a school. So the education part, that's something we are starting right now, but the thrust right now is to finish the 50 GVCS tools by the end of 2015. So
we'll
develop our techniques in 2014-15, go into rapid development, and at which phase we turn pretty much the focus shifts to education. And that is where we take individuals to become the OSC fellows, to go an immersion training crash course for 2 years. It's like university, except you get practical skills. And in the last 6 months, with our assistance and collaboration, we would build out a new facility elsewhere, and then you would run it. That's the general concept.
Well, ideally, you can find a way to organize the education so you are paid to regularly, you know, draw in everything that's being learned by the use and prototyping, and, you know, keep evolving both the set and the education.
Absolutely.
So it's a cycle.
Yeah, and so maybe we can talk more deeply about this, because this is, I think it's actually a great revenue model to where we put all the proceeds back into fueling further development. An excellent way. One way we thought about it right now is the production runs, the single day production runs, are an amazing transformative experience.
Uh-huh.
So we could have people coming in, actually paying us, and then the machine itself goes to some kind of a pilot project. So there's revenue streams in multiple locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's real funny. I sat down in 2008. I read the new housing bill that Congress passed, and I called my attorney, and I said, I'm right next to the farm, which is I'm friendly with the farm. I'm not right next to it. It's a couple hours away in Tennessee. And they give home building courses, and I always thought, oh, that's too hard. And I read the 2008 housing bill, and I called my attorney. I said, you know, and her son at the time was 16 years old. I said, it is much easier for your son to learn how to build his own house than to have to deal with the system anymore. And I think those kind of sprints would be very exciting for many people. Okay, well,
let me add to that, because there's one experience right now that we are offering, and that is on September 28th. We are going to do a build of the OSC micro house, where we show the use of the tractor and the brick press, and we build a 400-square-foot structure. Now the foundation is going to be prepared. We're going to build a 400-square-foot structure in one day.
Oh, fabulous.
24 people. We can have a lot more people doing documentation and other things. We're going to charge people for that. Other people get to come for free. This is actually part of our Kickstarter reward structure. We still owe people this natural building workshop, but actually this will be coming out. Follow us at opensourceecology.org. You can follow the blog, but that's going to be published actually this week. September 28th is, and we actually have a world-class, world leader architect, landscape designer, John Motlock from Ball State University, They are collaborating with us to put forward the design and do the construction management. This is really exciting.
And if somebody wants to sign up for that, how do they do it?
Email me, marcin@opensourceecology.org.
Okay. Great.
marcin@opensourceecology.org. So we're going to have probably 10 to 20 people from our side. We can open it up to about 10 to 20 more.
Okay. And you're going to be building it with brick?
We're going to be building it with brick.
Brick, okay.
And we're going to press 5,000 bricks in a day.
Ooh. there's a wonderful Sidney Poitier movie about pressing bricks. I don't know if you've ever seen it. But
oh, no.
That was my introduction to brick pressing. Okay, and it's gonna be at the farm in Missouri.
Yes, it's in the Kansas City area of Missouri.
Okay, perfect. Okay, now just you have to tell me, how many nationalities do you think you're working with around the world, both online and people coming to Missouri to do this with you?
The global community is naturally global. There's been 12 replications around the world, and I believe 4 or 5 countries. Actually, last month, the bricks started rolling off a press that was built in China.
Really?
So, yeah. And it's a person who actually came here as a dedicated project visitor. That's a way we can have people involved on site. They were actually organizing that project, and that. So it's interesting to see here and there. It's like, whoa, hey, that's my machine. And we encourage that. We're not afraid of that. We want these good tools to come out there, because they'll have to compete with us. It's an open market. So we're actually reinventing the open market here.
Has there been any connection between you and the woofers?
Yeah, we've had woofers here. There's been a few people on. Right now we're looking for a full-time farm manager as well. Our priority right now is to get a production manager to actually produce the machines, also a farm manager. So we're trying to work that into the budget. I think the production manager would be self-supporting by the model of production and education. And
this is why I think it's very important to grow the 1,000 true fans up to 1,000, because it would give you the steady inflow you need to build the management infrastructure.
That would be great.
I'm the queen of business models.
Okay, we need to talk. Because what I've learned, one of the main lessons, if you ask me what I learned personally, it's like there's a difference between vision and execution, isn't there?
Although I will say this, that my generation was not trained in project management, where you really break things down to a granular level, unless you're an engineer or you had certain kinds of, you know, particular training. Whereas I find your generation is, because of they've grown up with the software tools, is much better at complex project management and collaboration. So I'm hoping that has made a difference.
Yeah. Oh, I'm seeing just immense potential coming from that. The breakdown. There's the software model called I forget the name, but there's a model like that where basically in software, forget the name of that thing, where they have demonstrated already that if you take a complex software program, you can actually divide it into tiny parts and give it out as little chunks to many people, and that ends up costing you much less.
And well, my company in Washington was, I discovered when I worked in the Bush administration, I discovered sort of the internet and software tools, and the web was just starting. And so I went to the software industry to get the project management tools we needed to, because I was trying to reinvent sort of the capital formation process for what the new tools would allow. And the software world has those. We use something called the MIT Project Management System, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Open source?
I believe so, but what I'll do, anytime you want to, I'll give you a little mini course in the MIT project management software.
Oh, well, that's one thing we're really trying to get up here, is we just got our operations manager in place. We need to install it. We're not really doing much for project management right now. So we need
if you have time after the interview, I'd be delighted, or give me a time and I'll let you know.
Okay.
But it's okay. So one of the things I realized looking at the construction set was there are, when you build something and you want to just make it available open source, you think, oh, well, this is really easy. I'll just make it open source. And then you discover, no, I have unbelievable global issues in terms of the law related to how I protect this from somebody else copywriting it. Mm-hmm. And you know, basically reverse engineering it out of open source. How have you grappled with the legal issues of protecting the intellectual capital for the commons?
Yeah. So for one, we're installing a contributor agreement where people agree that OSC becomes the owner of this intellectual property in order to keep it open forever.
Uh-huh.
So people give their rights up to us as the protectors of the IP. Now, the good news is that anything that you publish openly, like even on a wiki, you can not get a patent of it because it becomes prior art. Now, the thing that does happen is that improvements can and do get patented.
Right.
But typically, so what's the solution for that? Well, we have a viral clause in our IP policy, which says that if you use our materials, then you have to contribute them back into the open.
Right.
I need improvements into the open. So
right.
That's how it works. So far, we didn't have any problems, but not like we've got any extraordinary IP right now. But the thing is, there's a question of sufficiency that I actually believe in quite strongly. It's like, okay, we built this brick press. Well, you can put all kinds of bells and whistles on it, but a 10 brick per minute brick press is as good as you need. You don't need
right.
any more for most purposes unless you're really insane. So so there's a sufficiency aspect. It's like we only need so much to thrive,
right.
and
right.
beyond that, it's extras. So,
right.
so there's that element that a lot of people are forgetting. Now, I do believe that innovation occurs constantly and things will get better and better, but there is also the sufficiency aspect.
Right. It's one of the dynamics you look, you know, I'm an investment advisor, so I work with individual families. And one of the things you see is their entire balance sheet and income statement has been intermediated by large organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And what they haven't really thought about is, okay, if I could re-engineer my time and do a lot more for myself or use my money, my famous story is I had one person who kept complaining that the yields on their portfolio were going down and their water bill was going up. I said, this is very simple. Sell your stock and build a well. And but there are all sorts of opportunities to disintermediate throughout their balance sheet and income statement. But it requires, you know, understanding what tools like yours can do. And, oh, you know, why don't I just do that myself? Or why don't
right.
I, you know, why doesn't the family get together and learn how to do this ourselves?
What are some examples? Like, okay, so the build a well. I mean, what kind of? Can you tell us a little bit? I mean, that's
sure. So, so another example is I have, I pay. Somebody pays a utility bill for their energy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it also exposes them to an increase in inflation. So, if you look at the economics of providing my energy myself. You know, and it could be providing my primary source of energy. It could be providing my backup source of energy. What you discover is, you know, maybe it's economic to do it myself. Maybe it isn't. But if I do it myself, it will protect me from further increases. You know, if suddenly the cost of energy should skyrocket,
right.
I'm protected.
Right.
And
yeah.
in fact, a lot of what whipsaws family is you get these cycles of sudden, you know, sudden price changes, and they get whipsawed. And part of making them strong is to protect them from those whipsaws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of look at it very simply as we're in control of our own destiny here. It's like being off-grid or doing things yourself means that you're just not susceptible to all these uncontrollable market forces. Yeah.
Well, if you look at what somebody has to do to generate an income, there are tremendous expenses involved in generating income. You know, I have to get my clothes dry cleaned. I have to buy, you know, more and different kinds of clothes. I have to commute to the office. I have to pay taxes. There may be professional taxes and fees involved. And so for me to get a dollar to pay my energy, I have to make $2 or $3. And then
right.
suddenly you say, well, wait a minute. You know, how much time does it take me to make that $3? And if I do it myself, you know, maybe I get a lot less revenues, but if you look at my wealth in terms of my financial or living equity, in fact, what I can show your models where, yes, your revenue goes down, but your savings in terms of things that create equity go up. Okay, yeah. And it can be pure financial equity because, in fact, I have less revenues, but I'm building the assets within my home base that right. make this whole operation require much less cash flow.
Right, especially if those assets are generative, where they
right.
generate more value over time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's the nature right. of the Global Village Construction Set. It's a constructor. It's not a static thing. You can make
right.
more of these things with it.
Right. So one thing I've always wanted to, and I've worked occasionally with the permaculturalists on, is if you look at a family budget and how much money they spend on landscaping, mm-hmm. and then you realize, well, wait a minute, why don't you convert that landscape into an edible landscape? And so the economics of that, both in terms of your food budget, but also your health budget, are much better over long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
to me, part of it is it's 1,000 little things. That's why I sort of love the permacultural approach,
mm-hmm.
because it's 1,000 little things of, putting your herb garden next to the kitchen instead of far away, and,
right.
little things that save... something that saves 10 minutes a week, if you come up with 100 of those over 30 years, it makes a difference.
It does, and I think the main challenge for a lot of people is dealing with the complexity involved, and that's where we have to,
right.
I guess, be open to that. I mean, to
right.
be the integrative thinkers. Yeah.
Right, so not everybody's a brilliant physicist. So that's why we appreciate your help. Okay, so just describe the term open source ecology. I think it's very valuable to understand this notion of an open
right.
source ecology and how you came up with the name and what it means and why it's important to everything.
Right. So I will first refer you to the wiki regarding the definition as we phrased it in about 2004 in a legacy site for OSE. But I talked about open source ecology being a system that integrates human and natural parts in complete harmony along the lines of open source or open collaboration or just flow, like flow happens in nature. So ecology refers to the integration
uh-huh.
of many things, and open source, I mean, that's kind of the best name I could come up for what I was thinking. It includes an open source economy, open source institution in harmony with how natural resources are extracted, because the sunlight, rocks, soil, plants, water, that's where all the wealth of the economy comes from, right? So we have to integrate that with the human experience.
Right. So the way I would say it, to me, what you're doing is, or what open source ecology is about, mm-hmm. is a sort of a process and methodology to optimize living equity. And,
okay.
So that's how a financial weenie might say it.
Okay. I'll start using that to my financial pals.
Okay. So so before we close, let's just walk. There was one question I had to ask you because I've been fascinated by it. You mentioned weeds, and the thing that I have found is the real killer in terms of making growing fresh food economic is the weeds.
So, weeds, yeah.
There's one group out in California that's been working on building sort of little robotics tools that can identify and weed without a
sure.
human having to do it, and I was sort of wondering what you're doing in the weed area and what you
okay.
think of that.
It depends what scale you are. Broad-scale agriculture, you have cultivation. I mean, that's one way to go. Or you can go with beds. Like, say you get, like, semi-field scale beds that are just... One technique I heard about, and I've never done it, but is, like, you have wide rows that you mow in between, and you put all the clippings into the growing beds. So, basically, it's constantly mulched. But the other thing is, yeah, I mean, the robotic thing. So, our tractor plus Arduino and automated controls yields... GPS precision automated farming, but we don't
uh-huh.
need to go there. There's simple tools available right now, like, for example, AgroCrew. I don't know if you've, maybe some people in the audience have heard about it, but it's basically a pivot system where there's a tiller weeder that goes around on a pivot. The thing pivots and can manage a, say, like a 30-foot radius or 50-foot radius pivot, where essentially automatically you can have this thing in your backyard, hit the return button when you program it, and you've got weeding, tilling, you can have planting done automatically. So That to me is actually, I mean, sounds a little bit, you know, we're getting away from nature here, but, you know, nobody, I mean, this could be something that the person who has no time for it can actually get Absolutely immersed in their agricultural system.
Wow.
I see a lot of potential.
Right. I think there is a lot of potential. You know, for many years, I was persuaded that the federal government did everything it could do to kind of hire up the smart guys so they couldn't go off and figure all this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but as the deficits compound, that's changing. And that gives me a lot of hope. Okay, well,
that the system cannot suck up all the smart guys?
Right.
Well, there's too many rebels out there. That's never going to happen. And there's Joy's Law. Whoever you are, all the talent is outside of your organization.
Okay, so before we close, let's walk us through again. I want to make sure everybody in the audience knows how they can connect, learn about, plug in, or if they want to participate, the different ways of doing so.
Okay, so first of all, I'd like to open up my emails. Email me, people, Marcin, M-A-R-C-I-N, at opensourceecology.org. If you've got any questions regarding signing up as a true fan, joining on site for a dedicated project visit, that could be university internships, community service, a project that you can do on site here. There's the design sprint. So one thing we're really trying to get up in numbers is the design sprint. You can look that up on a wiki under design sprint. But we're trying to get those numbers up to get the radically efficient development cycles where we can design a complex machine in as little as a single day. And that's a goal. That's one of the goals for within the next 6 months. We'll see if we can organize that. As far as getting in touch, just finding out about us, the best place to follow the continuous progress is the blog.
Okay.
So it'll be blog.opensourceecology.org. And our main static site is simply opensourceecology.org, where there's links to the wiki, to the blog, and everything else. But if you talk about points of entry, I mean, true fans for donations, but basically where people sign up for a $10 per month donation for the next 24 months, the dedicated project visits on site, and the design sprints held every single Saturday. I'm committing to that. I find a lot of good energy comes from that. Design sprints on Saturdays from 9 to 5 Central Standard Time.
Okay.
Those
9 to 5 Central? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Marcin, thank you so much for joining us on the Solera Report. And if you feel like it, hold on, and I'll give you a 10-minute overview of the MIT Project Management System.
Absolutely. That would be great. Thank you so much, Catherine. This is great. I love to be in further contact and scheme on some of these things.
We're in cahoots.
Mm-hmm.